Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Daily Tech News Show is powered by me, but I couldn't do it on my own. I'd like to thank the over 4,800 other patrons who help keep this show going each day. Visit dailytechnewsshow.com/support if you too would like to help power this show.
This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, August 2nd, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And joining us, very happy to have from Engadget.com, Nicole Lee back with us.
Hello, I'm here from foggy San Francisco.
It is foggy. We have finally hit the point where San Francisco has a significantly different temperature than Los Angeles.
Significantly so, yes. Yeah.
That is a season in California for those elsewhere in the world. Our producer Roger Chang is here as well, sweltering away in his house.
Sweltering in the sun-drenched Southern California sunshine.
So Nicole follows augmented reality among the many things that she covers over there at Engadget. So we're gonna check in on sort of the state of augmented reality. There was an interesting publication out from the folks who run the Game Developers Conference about that. But let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Announced in an email to publishers that apps for iOS and macOS will no longer be included in its affiliate program. The company says its new App Store interfaces for iOS and macOS have new methods of discovery for those apps. All other content types, that's music, movies, books, and TV, will remain in the affiliate program. Last year, Apple dropped the affiliate rate for in-app purchases from 7% to 2.5%.
Bad time to be somebody whose entire business was based on that affiliate revenue. Cisco announced it's buying security firm Duo Security for $2.35 billion. Co-founder and CEO Doug Song will continue as Duo's general manager and will join Cisco's networking and security business. Duo's security platform lets employees use their own devices for adaptive authentication instead of using separate key fobs with security codes.
A part of the battery usage UI in iOS 12 developer beta 5 shows an iPad with no home button, thinner bezels, and also no notch. So obviously somebody at Apple doesn't draw very well, or maybe there's another explanation. Maybe there's a buttonless, notchless iPad Pro on the horizon, maybe coming out this fall.
I like the idea of trying to come up with something else that could mean. It's good. San Diego federal jury awarded Wylan, a Canadian patent holding company, $145.1 million in damages from Apple for infringing its patents. The iPhone was found to have infringed two Wylan patents related to wireless communications. Apple plans to appeal that ruling, so that's not over yet. Let's talk a little more about Facebook.
Let's do it. Facebook is launching its own version of playable ads across its platforms and its apps. Playable ads let a player try out a game before actually downloading, get a sense of if it's fun, if you're going to want to do it, and are more likely to keep playing after installing because they already know that they like it. Facebook's playable ads launch a video of the game first and then shift to HTML5 for interactivity. The effort was in beta for more than a year, so Facebook has been working on this for some time. The company also introduced retention optimization, which charges more for ads delivered to people more likely to keep playing a game, and value optimization, which helps target players likely to make in-app purchases. So I guess that largely depends on your past behavior.
Yeah, there's a bunch of analytics that go into that, obviously. This is where Facebook uses all that data they collect on you to make predictions. This idea of playable ads is not new. It's something you've seen on Android and iOS as well. So, of course, Facebook rolling it out across the platforms means they're tying into people who sell things in the app stores. I don't ever play those ads. Do you, guys?
I mean, obviously Facebook's functionality just rolled out, so I haven't been able to try it out there. Yes,
but
I have tried
before,
this,
right? But I've seen them in on the web when I'm like on my Android tablet.
Yeah, and in general, especially when I used to do, I don't know, more app shows regularly where I was just downloading like app after app, anything that was playable, you know, a game or equivalent, that's a great feature. I mean, there are so many times you're like, oh, this isn't actually what I wanted. I wish I would have known beforehand. And then you either delete the app or it kind of just sits there. Facebook, knowing that there was probably a fair amount of that going on and trying to figure out, how will they allow advertisers to have a better understanding of who's downloading the stuff when they see it, but like, is it just sort of a fluke or is this actually a valuable customer who's going to be using using your game or your app for some time to come. That's an important distinction.
Yeah, I wonder if those playable ads will translate to them actually downloading and purchasing the game, just because I feel like a lot of the playable ads that I've seen anywhere are the kind of games that I would probably never download on my own volition. But they're like fun little, like, you know, bubble bejeweled clones, right? Usually, I think.
Do you play them?
I probably like see the demo and I probably like try to play like maybe one game. But it's not the kind of thing that I would ever download just because it's not a thing that I would do. But I can maybe people with different taste than I have might be willing to do that.
Well, that's the implication of this story. The reason Facebook has spent so much time and energy doing this is the advertiser saying, no, this works. We're using this in other platforms. And the people who play the game when they download it are more likely to keep playing it. So we're just the wrong people because we either don't play at all in my case or we don't download the game in your case. The Information has news sources that tell it Google is developing a news app for China. It would pick news algorithmically and attempt to work within the bounds of Chinese restrictions on what can be put in an app in China. Chinese news app Toutiao has run into trouble with the government for failing to police its algorithmically generated content. So they've paid some fines and been suspended a couple of times, but apparently they've weathered that storm. So it would be something Google would have to deal with as well. The app would supposedly arrive before the Google search app for China that The Information said they had sources saying Google was working on. We talked about that yesterday. Reuters added its own source at Google and one in the Chinese government confirming that Google does have a plan to bring a search app to China. Of course, all of this on the background of people ready to condemn Google if they play by Chinese filter rules and, of course, the looming trade war between China and the U.S.
Well, so this is, you know, to expand on the conversation we've been having earlier in the week of, is Google going to offer finally a Chinese friendly version of its browser to be able to grow in that market? Does it matter to anybody who would condemn Google for something like this that Google might instead launch a standalone news app for China specifically?
I mean, Nicole, they're already taking flack for the sources saying this. And of course, Google is not confirming that either of these things are true. I can't imagine that they wouldn't take less flack if they put it out.
Yeah, you know, this is kind of the issue that all businesses have to deal with when they deal with China, unfortunately. I think Facebook faced the same issue several years ago when it was trying to get big in China. And I think that's why when it comes to the Chinese market, Chinese internet companies tend to do better, like Baidu and those companies, like WeChat, for example. And whereas like US brands like Facebook and Google don't do as well just because of that that barrier. Well,
Facebook and Google particularly are not allowed to work in China unless they play by the filter restrictions, with which up until now neither have been willing to do. And of course, last week we heard about Facebook just trying to open a developer's office in China and not being able to yet get permission for that.
It's all. I'm also just, if this were to go through, I'm interested in how an algorithm like this would work, because, you know, it's like, okay, you block certain keywords, you block certain domains, you know, maybe, you know, you block certain journalists who are part of certain stories, but it kind of ends up usually, if you're actually not going to get in trouble for your algorithm letting stuff through, turning into, okay, well, these are the 10 sites that are cool with us.
Oh, Sarah, name one time an algorithm has ever failed to block content that someone didn't want to be published on the internet.
It's true. Robots are perfect. It's the humans that make mistakes.
There are a lot of news sites that have two different versions. Like, I know Engadget Chinese have like a behind the firewall version and not behind the firewall version of their news site. Mm-hmm. So I guess this is kind of basically like the compromise Google and Facebook and all these other companies have to make. And I guess the question comes down to, are US consumers, who are obviously more into free rides and free speech and all of that, whether we're okay with that or not?
I think a lot of people aren't, but whether it's enough to impact Google's bottom line or not is really the big question.
Yeah. Twitter announced Wednesday that users will no longer be able to automatically cross-post tweets to Facebook. Tom Merritt, looking at you.
Yeah.
Facebook has changed its API for a variety of reasons, data protection being a big part of it, to no longer let apps post to Facebook as the logged-in user via another service. IFTTT. Was that?
IFT.
Oh, all right. I thought there were two Fs in there. IFTTT also announced it could no longer support posting to Facebook profile pages, as well as a few other companies.
Yeah, so I will no longer be posting on Facebook, folks. The only thing you see from me posted on Facebook are my tweets.
That's right.
In general.
You're one of the holdouts.
I will suddenly be going silent. Yeah.
Well, there was a time where a lot of people were doing that. It has waned some, but I see a lot of, you know, people's tweets that either I saw on Twitter already that are on Facebook. It doesn't mean that you can't post a tweet to Facebook. It's just a manual, you know, copy paste or copy link to tweet, which Twitter has within its own settings. But Facebook says no more.
Does that upset you, Tom?
Not really, no. I kind of forget that it's going in the background sometimes until I see someone respond on Facebook. I'm like, oh, right. Stuff right here does show up over there. So in some ways, I'm almost glad. Oh, and thanks to Carol for writing in about this about 3 days ago.
Yeah, she did. Yes. Thank you so much to Carol. In fact, I saw that email yesterday and was like, that's interesting. It was before the sort of greater news broke out. So, Carol, thanks for being on the case and sending us an email she actually received from WordPress.com telling her of the upcoming changes.
Netherlands-based Efteling Theme Park is taking part in the NextWeb and Vodafone's IoT challenge to connect established companies with startups to solve problems. The idea for the theme park is to reduce downtime of rides and reduce maintenance costs. Two companies are in an article that are potential partners. One, Amsterdam's OneWatt, uses AI to detect problems in motors. So it could monitor the motors of these rides and help predict ride malfunctions before they happen. That means you can schedule the maintenance when the ride is not in use to prevent downtime. It would also be cheaper because you wouldn't have to keep so many maintenance people on call all the time. But one of the challenges is the background noise in a theme park is less predictable than in an industrial setting, so it's harder to filter out. That's an opportunity for Helsinki's Noiseless Acoustics, which detects problems in the sounds of machines. Their sensors and AI could learn to filter out the background noise and then pass along the resulting profile to OneWatt.
Wow. I did not realize this was something that a theme park had to worry about so much, although you do hear about issues that happen here and there. And also really interesting to be like, okay, well, if there's something about to malfunction with one of these rides, roller coaster or otherwise, the sound of it is actually a really big indicator. But that's funny because, yeah, theme parks are full of screaming kids, and filtering out sound is a particular challenge in a place like this.
Yeah, and in a factory floor, you probably have predictable sounds, right? The chunk, yeah. chunk, chunk, or whatever.
Sure.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Of the machines, whereas, you know, human noises are less predictable. So what I just think this is a really good example when people are like, what is AI good for besides taking my jobs? Well, here's an example.
I don't know if anybody's ever been stuck on a ride before. I have. Only happened once, but it wasn't fun.
Twice. Once on the Harry Potter ride at Universal and once on the Space Mountain at Disneyland. And I haven't been to theme parks that many times.
Oh, wow. Space Mountain would be a weird one, yeah. Especially if they turn on the lights and just ruin everything.
Totally did. Yep.
Oh, sorry to hear that, Tom. All right, well, maybe this will help cheer everybody up. Eridu, which is a German nonprofit organization, is using solar-powered MP3 players to bring health information to people in remote regions, specifically the Aka people and women specifically living in these regions, which is mostly based in the Central African Republic and Congo. The information is performed as a song by indigenous musicians, because again, a lot of these folks are closed off into the rest of the world because of a variety of reasons, not having access to newspapers or not being able to read, etc. One big topic: preventing diarrhea, which is reported to lead to the deaths of 2,195 children every day. That's more than, well, that's a big number. The Aka have no official written language, which is sort of lending to why this is important, often have limited or no access to written materials on healthcare, so the information is presented in songs that are stored on these MP3 players that are solar powered.
Don't get the diarrhea by not licking that thing.
I mean, this is
that's very catchy, Tom.
Thank you.
Know, but all kidding aside, it's like, think about this. It's like, okay, well,
it's genius. It really is.
Yeah, there are certain regions where people don't have access to healthcare information that they need. Even if they did have access to it, they can't necessarily read written materials or absorb information. But it's very important, and you don't want anybody to be sick and or dying, particularly children.
Absolutely.
And yeah, the fact that there's limited, power, and these MP3s are solar, and the song, haven't heard any of them, would love to. But
song is an important part of the culture of a lot of these people. So that is another reason why they do it through song, because people are like, oh yeah, no, I like absorbing information that way. It's actually a traditional way of doing it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I can think of lots of songs that I heard, at least when I was younger, about, you know, how to stay safe, presented through a song so kids remember.
Nicole, what do you think of this?
I think it's brilliant. And I wonder whether there are similar efforts in other parts of the world, because I can't imagine they're the only people who don't have a written language or aren't able to read. Right. So there are probably tons of communities all around the world that, I don't know, are illiterate or whatever it is. And this would be interesting to see how far reaching it is.
I wonder what other audio formats besides music could there be, you know, something with drumming or poetry that's just fascinating. Hey folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. All right, there's a new XRDC innovation report that came out from the UBM Game Network. They're the folks behind GDC, the Game Developers Conference. This is their third annual study of more than 600 AR and VR professionals to find out, how are things going with this? Are you still working on it? Are you still making games? And yes, they are. 70% of people developing for AR and VR are developing games. Now, these numbers are going to add up to more than 100% because some developers are working on more than one type of thing at a time. So don't get confused. But 70% are developing games. 37% are working on training and education uses. Now, that's up from 27% last year. So while gaming still is predominant, you're starting to see more development in other areas. 22% are working on medical and healthcare uses, 25% working on branded experiences. If you've been to a car dealership, some of them now have this sort of thing, or I've been to a movie theater where they were showing off aspects of, say, the Jungle Book movie was one in VR. So those kinds of things. As far as what they're working on, it's still the same equipment for now. HTC Vive is the most popular platform for the third year running. Oculus Rift still number two, although Android's AR core has now passed up Gear VR as the number three most popular platform. And if you're wondering about Magic Leap, it leaped from 3% to 8%.
Woo!
Yeah.
Woo!
So some people are actually using that development kit. And 75% of the people surveyed for this report think augmented reality will be bigger than virtual reality in the long term because it's more accessible and has broader use cases. And I went looking for some good examples of AR use cases that you might not think of. Gatwick Airport in the UK is using augmented reality as an airport guide to kind of help you get around the airport. IKEA, we've talked about, has a room organizer. Lowe's has a virtual tape measure and room organizer. Sephora has a virtual artist where you can see how makeup would look on you. There's a company called AccuVane that has a handheld device to help nurses scan the vein network of a patient and has led to a 45% reduction in escalations. Lockheed is actually one of the ones I was most impressed of because they are speeding up manufacturing processes on building spacecraft. Instead of having to look through binders of data or content on a computer across the room, man, the people working on building spacecraft are wearing AR devices like the HoloLens that overlay the instructions for drilling or applying torque to specific parts. And Shelley Peterson of Lockheed Martin said that augmented reality systems have now reduced manufacturing time from 6 weeks of drilling and assembly to 2.
Wow.
Yeah. So there are more people working on non-gaming uses of this. There are an expanding number of types of uses of this. Nicole, how does this mesh in with the coverage you've been seeing and reporting on?
So I think there are a few different factors here. And as you mentioned, augmented reality is much bigger than we think it is. And that's sort of the PR problem that augmented reality has right now, in the sense of, like, when you think of AR, you don't really think of anything. You think of, like, a really expensive HoloLens, and you think of, like, Magic, which isn't even in the market yet, right? So these are all, like, sort of very far away, distant things. The only thing you really think about are, like, you know, Pokemon Go or, like, the AR core, AR kit stuff, or, like, the, you know, Snapchat lenses, that kind of thing. But in actuality, AR is pretty big, but only in certain markets. Like, the enterprise is huge, and it's huge in the medical industry, the manufacturing industry. HoloLens is used with Ford. I think Microsoft partnered with Ford to use HoloLens so that engineers can visualize full-scale models in 3D. And I think there are some medical colleges or medical universities that are using medical imaging, so you can see, you know, the way the body structure is built, and so on and so forth. So it's actually pretty big in enterprise. And the reason for that is because augmented reality headsets right now, they're big, they're bulky, they're kind of clunky, and they're really expensive, like over $1,000 for a headset, right? And that's really expensive for a consumer. But for a business, $1,000 for a headset, like that's like no big deal. You know, it's not a big deal.
If you reduce production time by 4 weeks, it paid for itself quickly.
Yeah. Exactly. You pay like $1,000 any day.
Yeah.
So, right. And the issue, right, and that's why it's taken off so much more in enterprise markets and those sort of specialized markets, because it totally makes sense in those specific use cases. The problem is when you try to put that to like a consumer thing, like the way Magic Leap is trying to do it, I think a lot of other companies are trying to do it, it's like, it's hard. You have to get it really small, and like it has to be cheap. It has to look good, you know. So all of those situations coming in, like it's much harder for a consumer AR headset than it is for an enterprise headset. That doesn't mean AR isn't working. That doesn't mean AR isn't successful. It's just kind of very early days still.
Yeah, I mean, Google Glass still exists as an enterprise product, and people make jokes. And, you know, I try not to get pedantic about it. Like, Google Glass died a long time ago. I'm like, well, actually, no, it didn't. It just moved in. It just grew up and got a job. That's what happened to Google Glass.
But I think for me is somebody who's, you know, mildly interested in this. I mean, I'm interested in the sense of wanting to, you know, talk about it and know about it, but mildly interested in a virtual reality experience for the most part. Anything that gets me on board that can be tied to the devices I already use, obviously Apple is not alone, although I have an iPhone, but those sorts of AR experiences that just help my context, that will be something that I will start to apply to my everyday use without even saying anything like, yeah, I'm into AR. You know, it's just part of your life. The VR part of it is, you know, it requires, in many cases, hardware. Like you said, Nicole, expensive hardware, stuff that is less portable and limited and often wired. So that's why I think that, a lot of folks are, you know, whether or not they're even on the fence about, you know, where this is all going, we're using a lot of AR already. And we'll continue.
And I think you mentioned a great point about the AR AR kit for the iPhone, AR core for Android. And the reason why those are so important is because that is the stepping stone for developers to build AR apps. And once the AR apps ecosystem gets more robust, you know, we've seen the IKEA room organizer, we've seen like the Lowe's virtual tape and the Sephora virtual artist. Once you get more and more AR apps, like actual use cases for AR, and then the use case for our consumer headset starts to make more sense. It's like, oh, instead of using a phone to sort of like just like hold over my magazine to see the, you know, different things pop up, I can just wear my regular glasses and just see the same thing, right? So that's why the apps thing is really where it should start. Once you start finding a good use case for AR, it's like, oh, it totally makes sense. AR makes sense now. And I think that's where like the consumer introduction will sort of seep in.
And I feel like the thing that is hurting the perception of the success of AR is the same thing that might make it a success, which is I don't see it around me, right? With virtual reality, oh, I know when you're using it, right? Because you got that big old headset on your face. So I know VR, but that's also a barrier, which is like, oh, right, I have to go get that thing and put it on and cover my face and I can't see anything else and I can't do anything else. Whereas AR, I bet a lot of you listening have used it. You're just not thinking about it as AR. I mean, I was thinking about this earlier today. I went to do some measurements in the backyard. We were putting up a fence for the dogs. And instead of taking the actual measuring tape, I had my phone. I was like, oh, well, I'll just use this. I used the measuring app, right? Because I didn't think about it as I'm going to use AR. I was like, oh, I've got a measuring app. I'll just use this. But I was using augmented reality right then.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. We always have good VR and AR stories in there, but lots of stories. You can submit them. You can vote on stories that have already been submitted. And it helps us learn more about what you like to hear about. DailyTechNewsShow.reddit.com. go there, have some fun. Also on Facebook, facebook.com/group/Daily Tech News Show.
Yeah, I was in the Facebook group earlier this afternoon, popping in on a couple conversations. Good stuff in there. People kind of going over the news and in a critical way. I love to see that when people start to like, well, hold on, you posted this story, but I think maybe there's another angle to it. They're doing what we do on the show in the Facebook group, which is fantastic to see. We also love getting the emails. What's in the mailbag, Sarah?
Oh, glad you asked, Tom. John has some movie pass feedback based on our conversation yesterday and says he plans to cancel the service, and here's why. John says, the biggest deal breaker for my wife and I was peak pricing. This was implemented back in July. It was supposed to be a small surcharge on movies that were in very high demand in areas. First, I was okay with that. Theaters aren't always that crowded. We could probably find a showing that didn't have the surcharge and, you know, go at a later time. However, proved not to be true in my area. Last week, starting on Thursday, every movie and every showing had that surcharge. Every theater around us. This included the 10:30 p.m. showing of Teen Titans Go. Really can't see that showing being high in demand. Maybe it was. This continued until Monday when no show had the surcharge. That small surcharge, by the way, says John, is 50% over the normal ticket price, so not that small. With the change and the removal of new movies from the service, we just decided to cancel. When the price change was announced, without the removal of these restrictions, we thought, we'd made the right choice. We were willing to still pay $20 a month for the service if it didn't have restrictions, but now we're about to buy tickets at a normal price, having the convenience of buying tickets ahead of time when our local theater has reserved seating. What else are you going to do?
Yeah, you might want to check out Cinemia. They're available in a lot of places in the U.S., and they work with the theater systems to do the advanced purchasing. They're cheaper. They just didn't have unlimited. That's the big difference between Cinemia and MoviePass. They never got the big splash because they never went overboard. And they're also looking a lot more healthy as a business. But thank you, John.
Those unlimited packages, very rarely unlimited, after all.
Yeah, even if MoviePass's case, they're like, unlimited, we don't have enough money.
Yeah, did not work out well. Yeah, unlimited actually doesn't work. What we would love to be unlimited is Nicole Lee's future appearances on this show. Nicole, good to have you back, and let folks know where they can keep up with the rest of your work.
Happy to be back. You can just go to twitter.com/Nicole or just go to Engadget.com, and you'll find a story from me sooner or later.
Well, yeah, you're fresh back from vacation. You know, I got to give you a couple of minutes to get back over there.
Exactly.
But, yeah, but you do great work over there. So check it out, folks, Engadget.com.
Thanks.
And also, folks, check out patreon.com/DTNS. It's August 2nd, which means that if you are a supporter on Patreon, you need to go to the site to get all the perks. A lot of people throughout the month say, where was that link? How do I hook up to the Discord? Where do I find the podcast RSS? All of those questions are answered in a series of posts that went up yesterday at patreon.com/DTNS. And by the way, if you didn't back us yet, now's a great time to back us and get access to those posts. So go check it out, patreon.com/DTNS.
Hey, we love your feedback. Love it, love it, love it. Keep it coming. Feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com is our email address. If you can join us live, we'd love to have you. Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
We'll be back tomorrow with our special guest from the SMR podcast, Rob Dunwood. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.